Welcome to All Sides Weekend. I'm your host, Claire Roth. The holiday season can be overwhelming for anyone who's trying to cram in parties, cookie making, gift buying. But for people on the autism spectrum, all of that extra merrymaking can mean sensory overload when overstimulation invokes pain. A host of sensory-friendly activities are available in and around Columbus to help you manage the stress this holiday season. Check out a list on our website at wosu.org/allsides. This weekend, the New Albany Symphony Orchestra will perform a sensory-friendly performance and host a visit from Santa. Luis Biava is the conductor, and he joins me now. Welcome.
Good to be here.
Also joining us is Sarah Smalley, a parent of two children on the autism spectrum. Thanks so much for coming in, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.
Are you the parent of a child with sensory processing difficulties? What are some of your favorite activities to do with them in the holiday or otherwise? You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us allsides@wosu.org. Sarah, before we start talking about some of these sensory-friendly events, I'm hoping you can help us understand what sensory overload is and what it feels for your children and for children like yours.
So some of the things that most of us, whether children or adults, take for granted, walking into a room and there are heavy holiday smells or loud holiday music or blinking lights, we can process that. For kids like mine and other children with autism, that may overwhelm their body. The light plus the sound plus the texture plus the smell literally sends them into a little bit of a panic mode, and they're overstimulated and they need to take a break from at least one of those senses. Sometimes that can mean just going to a room with less light. It can mean providing noise cancellation headphones. It can mean only visiting a place when it's less busy so that some of that sound is automatically reduced. Less lines to wait in mean less people bumping into them and touching them. And all of those unexpected sensory experiences have to be considered in advance for the holiday season for kids like mine.
And I imagine that makes this season particularly difficult because there is so many crowds, so much going on.
It does. It takes a lot of planning ahead. At the same time, at least my particular children love Christmas. So we still want to get out and experience each one of these things. We just have to do it in the right way to support them so that they can get the same joy out of it that another child would.
And so I imagine that includes some specific sensory-friendly events, which we're going to talk about in a minute, but also other events that you just sort of manage in a different way.
Yes. So we will absolutely be at the New Albany Symphony concert tomorrow. And things that exist like that are incredible and perfect for us. But there are things like the wild lights at the Columbus Zoo. My kids love that, but we can't show up on a Saturday at 6 o'clock and wait 15 minutes in our car and then wait in line to get inside because they're already overwhelmed at that point. We just make a plan in advance. We only go on weekdays. We tend to go at 4 or 4:30. It's not even dark yet, but we can get in there. We can see the aquarium. By the time we come out of that, the lights are on, the music's on. We get to experience all of it in a not crowded atmosphere, and we're out the door before the crowd comes in.
Absolutely. I do want to speak about this New Albany Symphony Orchestra performance tomorrow. Louise, tell us, what should people expect? How does it differ from a typical concert for you all?
Well, like Sarah mentioned, it's a special creation for the autism spectrum kids and adults as well with Alzheimer's and dementia. Basically, it's just a shorter concert. And they can, the lights are dimmed, they're on, but they're dimmed so they can maybe read a little something if they want to, or play with whatever, you know, things they might bring to help them enjoy the concert. And they can get up and walk around, and they can leave and go outside into the lobby where we have a instrument petting zoo. They bring maybe some snacks too, or we have snacks for them. So it's just really, really whatever they need, you know. It's just and in fact, in a major concert, people, if they want to go, they can go too, you know. Sometimes some people mention that concerts are a little long, and then, well, just don't stay for the whole concert, you know. Just do what you like and then take off. But especially for this and the sensory friendly, we try to feature everybody that's in the other concert. So the kids will be singing. The Center Stage Singers, we have singers from Upper Columbus, and the great songs and carols from Christmas and Hanukkah. So we're doing Polar Express. If they, you know, watched the movie, a couple of scenes from that, a couple of songs the Sleigh Ride, which is always a beautiful, very, to me, it's very poignant too. It's an old song, but it's so great and so joyful about what it's like to be on a sleigh. So that's one of the things you do. And everybody, just, we do this exactly the same, you know, playing, and we're there for them. And that's what's the important thing.
One thing you said really caught my ear, an instrument petting zoo. Is that what I heard?
Yeah, exactly. It's a great, obviously the petting zoo was something with animals, but what the loft who helps us out, they just come out and they have all the instruments, you know, there in small different sizes, and the kids just go up there and they play them. So, you know, and sometimes if we do have winds or something, right now I think it's just strings, but the people at the loft have been very kind to come out, and then they are the ones who touch the instruments and play, put the bow on, pluck it and stuff, and where they get played, and they just see that. So
it really lets the kids interact with it on their terms.
Right, yeah, whatever they need and want. And we can do that also, you know, in other concerts. But the key thing is to just do what is necessary. And it's short, not so overloaded. We try to play a little softer. Sometimes that goes a little by the wayside. The things are so glorious, you know, the Joy to the World by Handel, you know, done by a big orchestra and things like that. But we try to just listen. That's when maybe they could leave, or they have their headphones, which is great. You know, I even use noise canceling headphones sometimes.
It's a really good point, this kind of softer noise. And I want to bring Melissa Lawrence into the conversation. She's a program supervisor with Nationwide Children's Center for Autism Spectrum Disorders. Hello, Melissa.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for coming into the studio. I'm wondering how noise can affect children and adults who are on the autism spectrum. What's happening when they hear loud noises?
I think it's kind of like Sarah said, for every kid, they process it a little bit differently. Some have really sensitive hearing, and so anything loud is amplified to them. Other kids seek out noise, and they like the sounds, and they like to make their own sounds. So I think noise kind of can affect kids differently.
Absolutely. And I think that is a really good point, where it's not just all, oh, this stuff is too much for them. This can actually be something that can help soothe them, that can help them grow, that can help them develop.
That's absolutely correct. A lot of kids with autism participate in music therapy. A lot of programs bring it in. And it's been pretty incredible through my years of watching kids that couldn't connect in other ways start to connect through music.
Sarah, you're the head of the PTA, I believe, at Bridgeway Academy, which serves a lot of children who have autism.
Yes.
What have you found about your kids and other children at Bridgeway? How do they interact with music? What do you think it does for them?
So music therapy literally brought language out of both of my boys and so many of my friends' children. It's the first place they each spoke. It's the place they're most verbal. It's the place they're happiest. I got to observe both of my boys just yesterday in music therapy, and to hear my 9-year-old, who didn't speak until he was 5, sing a pop song with his music therapist, smiling the entire time. I mean, it's just like one tiny little thing. I'm sorry that I'm bringing tears to you. I'm having them myself. Music literally, I mean, it speaks to all people and all children, but what it does for my particular kids is life-changing. I tell people all the time, if you ripped everything away from us and told us we could keep one thing, it would be music therapy, hands down.
Louise, you've done these symphonies not only for Christmas, but throughout the year for, I think, at least 2 years now. What do you see in the kids? How do you see them and the adults react to the music that the orchestra plays?
Well, I think mostly joy, the way they listen. We did a concert, the first one we did for this year included, this is all holiday music, and I love it, beautiful. We have some great arrangements, some standards, some classical things. For the first concert that we did, it was a really big honor because it was Beethoven. We did Beethoven. And having Beethoven struggled himself with a disability, it was really special for us to just share that with the kids. And somehow I think you know, they're geniuses because they sort of see it in a different way, in a better way than maybe all of us, because they really feel what it is. And we did something by Ponchielli from The Dance of the Hours, from the movie Fantasia, the famous, what I call the famous hippopotamus, you know, dancing the ballet. But we did it with the New Albany Ballet. Once again, I think it's very good for the younger kids to be do these concerts, because to help out and do what they need to do for the people that are in the audience. But I think it's mostly the joy that I see. And some of them might get upset, or it could be a little bit too much. But it's exactly what we want. Whatever they want to do, we're there for them. But the Beethoven thing was very special because we did Beethoven and an Italian work, and so a different type of sensory to them, you know.
I think that speaks so strongly to the power that music has, because if you said, oh, small children are obsessed with Beethoven, it sounds weird at first, but the power of that sort of music can really touch your heart, no matter what type of abilities you have, or no matter, you know, what way your brain works.
Right. Yeah.
Melissa, I'm curious how these sorts of events have developed over time. I know that you've been at Nationwide Children's with this center for 15 years. Even in the last 15 years, how do you feel this sort of access to these kinds of events has developed or grown?
Great question. When I first started at Children's, there was hardly anything out there like this. Families really struggled to be active members of their community. They struggled to get acceptance when they went places. And little by little, different organizations have come along that have really made autism and kids with autism and families with autism a priority. Things like Sensitive Santas, even White Castle, over the past few years have hosted a Sensitive Santa where kids can come in, see them without lines, get some food, and see Santa on their terms. It has been great. Concerts with New Albany Symphony and other symphonies have been wonderful. Even football camps exist where kids with autism get to go out there in a less impactful contact way, but still get to take part in these different activities.
Wow. Sarah, how does that ring true with your experience?
It's absolutely true. You know, my oldest is 12 now. He was diagnosed before he was 2. So we've been walking this path for more than 10 years. And it has been in the last few years that they've really just come about. We've been to each and every one of the New Albany Symphony Orchestra sensory-friendly concerts, and I haven't left one without crying, just that this exists. I mean, the songs will begin, and one of my kids might be jumping up and down, and the other one is literally just in a trance staring at the orchestra, and I'm in tears because we can do this, and they've created this concert that exists for us. We couldn't quite do a typical concert. I'm not sure the other guests around us would quite enjoy our liveliness. But in this environment, you know, the host will get on the stage before the concert starts. And he says, whatever you need to do, if that's running up and down the aisles, if that's getting up and jumping, if that's making your own song while you're watching, do it. And they mean it. I've seen kids do each and every one of those things. Step out to the lobby and take a break. One of my sons keeps his headphones in his lap so that if it gets too loud, he knows they're there and they're available. And the fact that things like this have come about and exist for families like mine is it's life-changing. It allows us to experience these things that all other families, you know, get to experience and maybe even take for granted that can be really hard for us, but that our kids love just as much.
Louise, before we let you go, I have to ask, what's your favorite part of this experience?
In the sensory-friendly concerts?
Yes.
I think it's just watching the kids enjoy the pieces and whatever they do. I've of course, you know, been around other kids that have this sort of thing. And then, you know, we've been around Alzheimer's and we've been around people with dementia, you know, family members, that sort of thing. And I know people that have that situation. I think it's a question of the enjoyable part of what we give to them. You know, with all the help that we have from all the, you know, Children's Hospital and Sarah and her group. And then, you know, we have to think that the funding is really important to thank you to PNC and Heather and New Albany and all my friends who are in the orchestra, you know, with our members that help out. It's the best thing that it does. In addition to the big concerts, it's more of the same, only we do it specially just for people. So they really feel like we're all part of the same team. That's the thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Luis Piava is the conductor of the New Albany Symphony Orchestra. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to All Sides Weekend. I'm Claire Roth. We'll be back in just a moment with Sarah Smalley and Melissa Lawrence for more discussion of sensory-friendly performances in this holiday season.
Thank you.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm your host, Claire Roth. December is one of the most hectic times of the year, no matter what your traditions or your beliefs. For people on the autism spectrum, the increased crowds, the unexpected lights and noise, and the general bustle of the season can make this time of year even more stressful. So arts groups and businesses around Columbus are hosting sensory-friendly events to provide a space for children and adults on the autism spectrum to happily and comfortably celebrate the season and beyond. You can find a list of those events on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Still with us is Melissa Lawrence, Program Supervisor for the Nationwide Children's Center for Autism Spectrum Disorders. Also with us, Sarah Smalley, the parent of two children on the autism spectrum. And joining us now is Lindsay Vidra, co-owner of We Rock the Spectrum Columbus. It's a sensory-friendly gym that's opening this weekend. Welcome to the program, Lindsay.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So tell us, how does a sensory-friendly gym differ from a typical children's gym?
We are a smaller gym than compared to some of the bigger trampoline kind of places. And we also have various items that were picked out by OTs to help us.
Occupational therapists.
Yes, occupational therapists to help us create a space for these kids to get what they need for their sensory needs. So we have a trampoline. We have a zip line, so they can get that crash and burn. We also have the swing apparatus that has numerous swings on it. So it can be a variety of swings for these kids to get that input that they need.
You were a special education teacher.
That's correct.
For years. Besides the goal of fun, which is obviously important for any child, what does physical activity benefit children? How does it benefit children on the spectrum beyond just that kind of sense of fun and the fact that we all need to be moving our bodies?
It allows them to kind of calm those sensory issues that they may have. So it could ease them a little bit, allow them to focus a little bit more. So some of those exercises could help with those aspects.
Absolutely. Ms. Melissa, I'm wondering if you can comment on how physical activity really interacts with autism spectrum disorders.
Yes. So most or a lot of kids with autism spectrum disorders have very great gross motor skills. They like to climb, they like to run, they like to jump. The problem is they don't necessarily have the ability to do it in a playground setting or in an open area. So finding gyms like the new one that's opening or places that they can go and parents take a little worry off their shoulders that they're going to interact incorrectly with other peers is wonderful. So having a place that's accepting and opening where kids can use and parents can feel safe is a win-win for all.
And where there's that built-in understanding of some of the struggles that might come with that kind of disorder and that type of child, you know, what they're facing. Like you have a dark room, right?
We do. We have a calming room. So it's a nice, quiet space that we'll have. It's pretty dark and we have different sensory items in there. So we have headphones if the children would like to use headphones. We have a weighted blanket in there as well. And then we have a wall with different textures where they could play around with those textures and get those sensations. And so that's our calming room.
Sarah, I want to talk to you about this. How do your sons interact with physical touch? What does it mean to them?
So my two sons love physical touch. They crave it. They can't get enough of it. They are definitely a little more under-responsive as far as sensory systems go. That means they want all the tickles. They want all the hugs. They want all the squeezes. They want all the swinging, all the bouncing. They want it all. Now, there are other kids. I have all of my friends are other autism parents and other kids, that's completely overwhelming. They don't want to walk into, you know, a great aunt's home and everyone there hugs them and gives them all of that touch. That's immediately alarming to them and they're going to need their own private little dark room. To what these ladies were saying, I work at Sensory Solutions with occupational therapists and they'll be the first to tell you that it's important for our kids more than any kids that they get that proprioceptive and vestibular input, and over the holidays even more so because they're not getting their normal routines. They're not at school. They're not getting their physical therapy and occupational therapy and adaptive PE. And so to have a gym where they can access a lot of those things in a safe environment is more important over a holiday season than any other time of year.
I think this is an important point where it's not just about limiting the amount of harm that comes to them, but ensuring that they have pathways so that they can express themselves and their physicality, for instance, in a way that they feel comfortable with.
Yes, because my kids are the first ones to – they want to go. They want to go out and experience things and go places. But we attend a lot of the trampoline parks. Most of them know us by face. But we specifically go, for example, the Bounce Club in Powell. They have a sensory-friendly special needs class every Sunday at 10:30 a.m. The difference between that and a normal day is it's less crowded. All of the families there get it. You know, there are specific things at a trampoline park where you stand in line at this trampoline to jump into the foam pit. Our kids don't necessarily, one, understand that rule, or two, care about jumping down that particular trampoline three times into a foam pit. They just want all the input. So at the special needs class, everyone accesses all of the trampolines in whatever way they want to. There aren't lines. There aren't maybe some of the rules of only one kid per square, when my 9-year-old wants more than anything in life for me to jump in the square with him. So just having access to those type of environments and activities for our kids is great enjoyment for them, great input for them, great physical activity for them.
It's taking some of those limitations away. Yes. So that they can truly enjoy it.
Absolutely.
I want to talk to you, Melissa, about tactile response, because it's not just about, you know, jumping, the feeling of your body going through the air, but also how do some children react to, for instance, you know, fabric on their skin? Are there any tactile things we need to be looking out for, thinking about in that regard?
Great question. I believe that each child is so different. There are some kids that can't have shirts with tags in it, and they need to have them either cut out or the shirts with the writing on the back, where other kids aren't bothered at all by textures or feelings on their skin. It's unique to each child, and each child on the spectrum is a little bit different on what needs that they have individually and what modifications need to be made to their environment to make sure that they're successful.
How does this sort of physical activity help them grow, help their brains, and help them develop as people?
I think that any kind of physical activity, and we use a lot at Children's, we've got a sports camp that we offer during the summer for kids that are 14 to 21, where they get out and they are involved in sports and recreational outings. And the reason being is that kids with autism tend to have a lot more restricted interest. And as they get older, they don't have the ability to interact in a lot of different types of recreation and leisure activities. So at a young age, if we can get them involved in sporting events and sporting opportunities or climbing gyms or bounce houses, then later on they can use those tools that they developed at a younger age in order to have more opportunities for recreation and leisure.
Do we know why that limited interest exists?
That's one of the symptoms of autism is restricted or perseverative interest. I'm sure that somewhere there it's out there. It's just one of the symptoms.
Absolutely. Lindsay, I'm interested in your perspective as an educator and as someone that's also creating this space for these children to live in. Help me understand the importance of them getting this at a young age, as Melissa talked about, so that it can serve them the entirety of their lives.
Well, I think starting those kind of activities at a young age are good to also facilitate relationships with their peers and even just their family members as well. And at our gym, that is one place that we talk about is it's a full inclusion kind of place that we want kids of all abilities to be able to come to and experience the people within their community.
Sarah, how does that square with your experience in terms of pushing social interaction or encouraging social interaction, rather, in the context of physical activity or other activities that we're talking about this hour?
It takes a lot to encourage social interaction from most of our kids, my two kids being at the top of that list. They're extremely social with adults, especially familiar adults, but it takes either physical activity or music to promote any interest in their peers. That's really the only way we can do it. I can get them to make a short conversation on a trampoline or at a bounce house. I can get them to do it if we're experiencing music, but it really does take some of those very specific engaging activities for them to show interest in other kids their age. Not true of all children on the spectrum, but very much so of mine.
You're listening to All Sides Weekend. I'm Claire Roth, and we're talking this hour about autism spectrum disorders and how children and adults who have them might best experience the holiday season. I'm here with Sarah Smalley. She's a parent of two children on the autism spectrum. Also with me is Melissa Lawrence, a program supervisor with the Nationwide Children's Center for Autism Spectrum Disorders, and Lindsay Vidra, a co-owner of We Rock the Spectrum Columbus, a gym, a sensory-friendly gym for children with autism spectrum disorders and other sensory processing disorders to go to. When it comes to this autism spectrum disorder thought and just for children in general being comfortable, I'm wondering if we can help distinguish between a child who's having a sensory overload and people who say, oh, that's just a temper tantrum. How do we help people understand the difference between those two things?
I think just more and more education about the child individually. And I think, you know, relying on parents to kind of know their child more so than others might. And regardless of whether it's a temper tantrum or it's sensory overload, you still have a child who's upset and you still have a parent who's trying their hardest to manage that situation.
I would agree completely. To an outsider, they may look identical. I don't know that when we're in Target and one or the other of these is happening, my kids like Target a lot.
So do I.
I don't know to a passerby that it's going to look any different. So I would just encourage people to be very understanding in any situation that they have no idea what has caused this or what's going to make it better. I have had people approach me in a positive way and just say, is there anything I can do for you? Sometimes there is. You know, can you pick up that water bottle? Because just getting him a sip of water may help. But just remembering that these kids aren't always, they're not choosing for this moment to happen. One may not understand the communication of, I can remember particularly my son years ago having a meltdown in the Target on Sawmill because there is a Chick-fil-A across the street and it was Sunday. And when we're checking out, he's saying, next is Chick-fil-A. And I'm saying, they're not open today. He had very little language at that point. That meant nothing to him. All he heard was me saying that wasn't going to happen. And he didn't understand the language of it. So it wasn't necessarily a sensory experience, but it was a lack of language experience that caused him to melt down because all he hears from me is, we're not going there. And he doesn't know why. The same can happen from sensory overload, you know, standing in a long crowded line. They don't necessarily, my kids now do, but when they were younger, and some kids even older than them don't understand the concept of we have to wait in this line and where you have to pay for our groceries. So to them, we're just delaying the next activity. It can happen for many reasons, and it may look different every time. It may look the same as a typical tantrum from another child. So I would just tell people to just remember everybody's going through something different. And if you think you can do it, lend a hand, just do it carefully and in a proactive way by speaking to the parent and not approaching the child. But I will say, even when nothing can be done, I appreciate it. And I leave the store thinking, wow, somebody really stepped up and wanted to help us through what we were going through.
It's about having that compassion as a baseline.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
I think this brings up this very interesting point because we're talking about specific places where it's sensory friendly and it's forwardly thinking about, you know, children and adults who might be struggling with this. What can other people and other places do to work towards this, even if they're not going to, you know, have a specific sensory friendly concert or do something specific? What are some small things that members of the public and organizations can do to better work towards inclusion?
It depends on the family again. And, you know, I think just being accepting, you know, more and more places are having family restrooms now. Even that, although not an overnight availability to many places, it makes a huge difference. I don't think places realize I have a 12 and 9-year-old now, and I'm a single parent. So to take them into the women's restroom, sometimes we do get comments, but they aren't at a level that they're able to independently go into the men's restroom. They're independent with their restrooming duties, but they won't necessarily come back out. They just would rather look at themselves in the mirror. So more and more places having something that's, whether it's a family restroom or a unisex restroom, things like that are extremely helpful. Just promoting an accepting atmosphere. You know, some places will go, they do have fidgets. Restaurants are picking up on that now. And so you can, at some restaurants, you can tell them when you check in, I have a child with special needs. Could you set us in a quieter area of the restaurant? Some places are very quick to, absolutely, we'd be happy to. To be honest, it's going to keep the rest of their patrons happier as well in case we get a little lively. Or they may say, yes, we're happy to have you here. We have some fidgets available. They might have a small weighted blanket. Haircut places are doing that now. Our haircut establishment has a sensory chair. They offer weighted blankets and sensory bottles for the haircut. Just having those little tiny things that really could help our children and at the very least are going to make the parent feel more comfortable it makes all the difference.
And Claire, we're getting a lot more requests from different members of the community organizations out there that are asking for our staff to come in and do trainings on how they can better serve families and children with autism. And that's a huge step. And we offer those most of the time free of charge to any businesses or organizations that are out there just so they can gain a better understanding of how to serve these families.
Do you think that that sort of trend is happening because of awareness? What do you think has caused that and what can push that even farther?
I definitely think the increase of awareness has been critical. We have one of the most successful Autism Speaks Walks in all of the country. We have people that are coming out and doing things like White Castle is such a mover and a shaker in the autism community, and more organizations are doing things. Cameron Mitchell hosted a night where they brought in a lot of staff members and parents with their restaurant staff to make sure that they understood how to serve and how to equip families. So I think unfortunately, as the diagnosis rate goes up to where 1 in 64 now, it's meaning a change across the environments.
What have you observed there?
Yeah, I would agree that the prevalence is higher. You know, when I was in school, I knew one person in our entire county in the school system that was on the autism spectrum. I don't think you'll find a classroom without one now. So I think it's more and more prevalent. I think more and more professionals and parents are much more vocal in asking for these things. Our PTA at Bridgeway, we over the two-week break off of school can be very challenging for families. We reach out to multiple venues and different businesses, and we plan about 2 to 3 events for each week that our families have specifically for them. So, one, that's giving our families an outlet, and two, it's helping us to educate those different places about, here we are, we'll spend our money, we'll pay you full price. We just want an accepting atmosphere. And then it allows our families to see the environment, to show their children, look, this is a new cool place that's fun. And then they may try to go back during a regular open hour at a later time if they know their child has been successful there. So I think just all of the awareness, the increase in the diagnosis rate, and the professionals and parents who are just really promoting acceptance and getting the word out there about, you know, we want to experience these things too, has made a big difference.
Lindsay, what do you think is the most critical thing as you go forward with this gym, this space that you're providing for children to play?
I think we just want people to know that it is a safe place for families to come to where they can interact with each other in positive ways. So you have your kids with your special needs or your autism that can be there, but they can interact with their siblings as well. So we have everything that anybody's going to enjoy. Our apparatuses, they're going to enjoy our swings. That gives them that chance to have family time, to be able to do something as a family.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on the program today.
Thank you.
Lindsay Vidra is the co-owner of We Rock the Spectrum Columbus. It's a sensory-friendly gym that's opening this weekend. You're listening to All Sides Weekend. I'm Claire Roth. We'll be back in just a moment with Sarah Smalley and Melissa Lawrence to talk a little bit more about children on the autism spectrum during the holidays. Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm Claire Roth. This hour, we're talking about children on the autism spectrum in the holidays. In and around Columbus, many organizations are hosting sensory-friendly events made especially for children who may be overwhelmed by typical holiday events. You can find a list on our website at wosu.org/allsides. If you're a parent of a child on the autism spectrum and you have best practices or tips for handling the holidays, we would love to hear from you. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Still with us is Sarah Smalley. She's a mom of two boys with autism. Also, Melissa Lawrence, program supervisor with the Nationwide Children's Center for Autism Spectrum Disorders. And joining us now by phone is Ryan Scarlatta, associate artistic director at the Columbus Children's Theater. Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
So you're putting on a sensory-friendly production of Mr. Scrooge tomorrow. What should parents expect?
Our sensory-friendly production, Mr. Scrooge, we kind of really focus on staying true to the story and true to the production. We've made several adjustments to how it's presented in that we prepare the audience ahead of time. They receive handouts as they come in about a couple of the moments of the show, which may be jarring for some of the attendees. We have to review them before the show with the audience. But mainly, the big thing to expect is a comfortable, relaxing, judgment-free environment. We keep our house lights on slightly during the performance so that attendees can feel free to move about, to change seats. We keep the attendance size much lower than what we can actually fit so that we can allow people that kind of freedom to move about. They can also move to our lobby during the production if they want to take a break. We have some family resources available for them there, and fidgets, and we have a television screen where they can continue to watch the show in the lobby if they'd like.
The Columbus Children's Theater has done this sort of production before. How has it developed over the years? What do you think are some of the big changes or the things that you really learned from previous productions?
Sure. Well, we've been very excited. I believe this is our ninth year.
Wow.
Since we've started doing sensory-friendly performances. And with it, it started with one audience member who came to us and said, "Hey, have you ever thought about this?" And we said, "Well, I don't know what that is. Let's find out. Let's, see how does that work." So we did the first several years of doing one show and one performance a year. And now this year is our first year where we actually have sensory-friendly performances for each one of our main stage productions. So it's not just Mr. Scrooge looking ahead. We have Little Red Riding Hood and The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, several different performances coming up throughout the rest of the year. And we're actually doing two sensory-friendly performances for each of our productions. So it's really, really grown. And it's been exciting to meet all the families, to form these relationships with these families and see, we have many that are regulars that come to all of our sensory-friendly performances. We have families that started with sensory-friendly performances and, have now begun attending typical performances. They've come in, they've last 5 minutes, that's fine. 5 minutes is what you can do this time, great. Sometimes it's 20, but they work their way up, and we really strive to create an environment where they can, everyone can feel free to do that.
What's the experience like from the stage? I imagine that it would be very different than having the typical audience that is, completely quiet and in the dark. So does that change how the actors feel about it at all?
Given that we're children's theater,
you're right. Good point.
we we're such a unique space in that, when somebody needs to get up and needs to walk around, as it is, we're small, intimate theater, so we can see when that happens. So and we're used to it. We're used to an audience being children's theater. We're used to an audience that this is their. For many of them, this is their first time experiencing live theater. So I always like to when I'm actors in preparations for a sensory-friendly performance, I kind of, tell them, hey, this is really not that different from a typical performance. And as actors, we are, of course, training you and everybody, even the professional actors are already trained to understand that unexpected things happen. We're just telling you to expect it.
See, I think that's actually a point I really would love to talk about, because the thing that you talk about with this kind of pamphlet that you give out, talking about some of the things that they can prepare for. Sarah, can you talk about the importance of preparation, of expecting the quote-unquote unexpected that Ryan just mentioned?
Yes. So they actually have a social story available on their website. We have been to, I think, two of the sensory-friendly performances, and that made a huge difference for us. I was able to print out the social story, share it with my kids before we went to the show, especially on the very first visit. They don't know what the Columbus Children's Theater is. They don't know where we're parking. Why are we parking in this place? You know, what is the expectation? What's happening next? And actually having visual pictures and maybe even a list of this will happen and then this will happen and then this will happen gives my kids and a lot of kids on the spectrum a little more sense of control. You know, there's so much in their lives that they can't control, and they have the inability to communicate certain likes and certain dislikes, that giving them any sense of this is what's about to happen and now you have a little bit of control over the situation immediately lessens their anxiety, puts them at ease, and a little better ready to enjoy the show.
How do those lessons translate to things that aren't necessarily just a performance, to the holidays in general? Because the holidays are a huge break from routine.
They are. And we actually do. We have a social story about the holidays in general.
And when you say social story, can you explain what that means?
So you could think of it like a children's book, but very specific. Like it's a social story written for my family. So when you flip through, it might say the holidays are coming up and have a picture of a Christmas tree. The next page might say that means we won't go to school for 2 weeks, but we'll have plenty of fun things to do at home. And the next page may have pictures of all the different places we're going to go. And it says something like lunch may not happen at school, but mom will cook you a great lunch. You'll get to pick between grilled cheese and beans. It literally just gives them a sense of this is what's about to happen. You have some control over it. You won't be totally shocked each morning when we don't go to school. And sometimes those are made for very specific events, but they can also be very general like that. It's just as though, you know, children read a Christmas book, and so they know Santa's about to come. This is the Christmas book for my kids, so they know what's about to happen for the next few weeks.
Melissa, do you have any of those sorts of tips or practices that can make this sort of transition to a winter break easier for children on the autism spectrum?
Yeah, like Sarah said, social stories are wonderful. There's a great website. It's called adayinyourshoes.com, and they have Christmas and holiday social stories to allow families just to print them out and fill in personal information for them so that they can get used to what's coming up next. They have knowing which present is yours under the Christmas tree, or how to say thank you if you get something you're not very happy with. Some of these social skills that kids with autism don't necessarily have or haven't been taught, the social stories are able to go over them with them and give them a better understanding. Also, as Sarah mentioned, visual schedules are wonderful. So to post on the calendar, today we're going to the New Albany Symphony. Tomorrow we're going to go to the library, and just so that the kids see every day what they're doing and where they're going. And then even as kids prepare to go outside, it's now much colder than it was last week at this time, and kids are now having to put on boots and hats and sweaters and mittens. And even that is a change in the routine. So there's even visual schedules and social stories about needing to wear warmer clothes now that it's cold out, or that the snow is icy and you can't stay out for 20 minutes.
So they can expect those things that they might not be expecting, as Ryan said.
Exactly. That's absolutely right.
Ryan, how do children react to these sensory-friendly performances?
Well, you know, I think every child is different. We see many different reactions. Like I said, you know, we've had experiences where sometimes, you know, they'll come in and you know, they'll get as far as the front door, and that was good. You know, that was you know, an acceptable amount to do. And next time, you know, now that I've seen this much, next time I'll even know more about what to expect and can return. Majority of our audience members are there the duration of the performance, and you know, there are some of our performances that we do actually involve some audience participation. Mr. Scrooge does not, but I did want to talk about one example of one that we had that did. We actually had a volunteer then from the audience who raised their hand, went backstage with the actors, learned a couple of lines, was, you know, back there in the dark and was able to come out and perform these lines in front of the audience. And the parent came to us afterward and said, I couldn't believe that he did that. He doesn't even want to raise his hand, let alone, you know, get up and get on the stage. I think that there is something magical about theater and how it makes you inherently feel safe. And I do believe that, you know, that's what we do here and what we do with our sensory friendly performances, again, is to make them all feel safe, make everybody feel welcome, and hopefully, you know, even get you to do something that you didn't think that you would have done.
Well, thank you so much for telling us about the sensory friendly performance of Mr. Scrooge, Ryan.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Ryan Scarlotta is the Associate Artistic Director at the Columbus Children's Theater. Thinking about these unexpected things, thinking about preparing your children, what can extended family do? Who might be seeing a niece or a nephew that they don't see much of the year, who might not be as used to those routines? What can they apply? What can they prepare for? What can they do to make your life easier?
The biggest thing I would recommend is reaching out to the parents in advance, because they're going to know their children the best and know what might be helpful. It can be something as simple as sending a picture of the house so the kids know exactly where they're going, sending a picture of the room where they'll all celebrate together so the parents can prep the child with that. It could be making sure a favorite snack is available so the kid can have some excitement about, wow, this place is fun too. They have potato chips or whatever it might be. It could be when the parent says, you know, we might need to take a break, we might need a quiet space, then saying, okay, you know what, we'll make sure this one bedroom is available. It's yours. If you guys need to take a break, it's there. It may never be needed, but the parents and the child knowing that it exists and that's available to them will put them a little more at ease. The parents may have something to say like, my child will be overwhelmed if everyone hugs them as they walk in the door. Or they may say, my child's going to want to hug everyone when they come in. You might prep them for that because this could be a 3-year-old or a 17-year-old. Just having that exchange of information in advance before a big holiday gathering that automatically is something different and something new to the children can make a huge difference.
And I think just to add on is making sure everyone has realistic expectations. Everyone has these Christmas movies in mind with Martha Stewart and the tables are set perfectly, and they don't happen. So even if a parent can let everyone know kind of what they're hoping to happen, and so that everyone is on that same page, is probably a really good thing as well.
It's about open communication and compassion.
Yes, absolutely. Those two things will make the world of difference.
When you look ahead to this holiday season, can you think of any times where you thought, wow, that person really did like a great job and I'm so glad that, you know, they had that reaction? Can you think of good examples?
Yeah, I can tell you that we used to do the big family Christmas back in West Virginia where I'm from. We would often be at one of my aunt's house, and they would always make a point of either having a space where I could bring our foods that my kids were going to tolerate and eat. And they would make a point of, okay, let's get that warm so they can eat at the same time. But they would also be completely open-minded and understand when I said, you know, what's going to work best for us is actually if they eat in the other room, and maybe I'll eat with them, maybe one or two other family members will eat in there with them. And they absolutely just being very accepting of my ideas and what I think is going to work best for my kids and almost celebrating them. Like, yes, I would love to be the person that eats in that room with you. That way my kids get to have an amazing time. We get that one extra person that makes us feel like part of the event. But everyone's happy and everyone gets their wonderful meal.
Yeah, and instead of striving for the perfect courier and knives postcard,
correct.
Just being flexible and
absolutely.
Open. Well, thank you so much for talking with me today, Sarah Smalley.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
Sarah Smalley is the parent of two children on the autism spectrum. And thank you, Melissa Lawrence, for joining us.
Absolutely. It's been my pleasure.
Melissa Lawrence is a program supervisor with Nationwide Children's Center for Autism Spectrum Disorders. You're listening to All Sides Weekend. All Sides staff includes producer Michael DeBonis and assistant producer Shia Lanott. I'm Claire Roth. Have a wonderful weekend.